Good morning, folks. Thanks so much for your welcome this morning. It's really, really nice to be here again. So I'm told you've started off the year this year by looking at a short list of some of the commands Jesus gave to his followers. And I hear you've talked about his command to repent and believe. You've talked about his command to be baptized. And we're going to think this morning about his command, pretty much the last thing he said to his followers before he returned to heaven after he died and rose again, was his command to go and make disciples of all nations, was one of the last, almost the last words that Jesus spoke to his disciples. So we're going to do this nice and simple this morning. We're going to talk about what that means. Who are his disciples? What does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus? We're going to think about how disciples are actually made. He tells us to make disciples, but how is it done? And we're going to have a think about why. Why is it so important? Why would Jesus impress the command to do this upon his followers? We're going to read. I'd like us to read from John's Gospel. If you've got your Bible and you want to follow, we're going to read some of John chapter 10. John chapter 10, and we're going to start reading at verse 1. And we're going to use this. We're going to keep referring to this. We'll look at other parts of the New Testament as well while we're talking, but try and keep a finger in this page because we'll keep coming back to it. So Jesus said this to his disciples, John 10, verse 1, I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him, because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him, because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but they did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they might have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. So we're going to keep referring back to that. There's a couple of other parts of the New Testament we'll look at. As well. Let's think about this then. Who is a disciple? If you look up a dictionary definition of a disciple, it'll say that a disciple is somebody who's a follower or a pupil who follows a teacher or a leader of some kind. So you can be a disciple of a person or of their teaching. You can be a disciple of Mary Berry if you like. Who wouldn't want to be like Mary Berry? You know, she's dignified, she's cultured. I even heard her claim on the radio recently that she's never had a takeaway in her life. Can she really be that perfect? So you can follow Mary Berry if you like, and she'll certainly turn you into a good cook. And she probably teaches some very good other habits as well. You can follow all sorts of people, can't you? There's people that we look up to at various stages in our life. We'll think about what that means in terms of faith or religion later on. But when Jesus talks about making disciples, he's talking about making people into people who want to follow him, being disciples of him, to be quite specific. How about this definition of a disciple? I looked this up during the week. A true disciple of Jesus is one who is totally loyal to him. He or she is totally committed to Jesus and to his cause. To be a true disciple of Jesus is to identify with Jesus and his cause, whether it's popular or not. It is to associate with him and everything that he stands for. That's worth memorizing, isn't it? I was reading it. I didn't memorize it. But Jesus has given a command to his people, to his followers, to go and make disciples. But I can't make disciples. I can't help other people become disciples until I've become a disciple of Jesus myself. Before I can follow Jesus' command to go and make disciples, I must become a disciple myself. In John chapter 10 that we read together, you'll notice the word sheep appeared quite a lot in there. I don't know if you're counting, but I reckon it was probably 12 or 15 times in what we read. Sheep are very good at following. In fact, they're experts at following, aren't they? Following each other and following their shepherd. So they're a very good example of what it's like to be a disciple. But before I can disciple others, before I can nurture others and bring others on in their relationship with Jesus, or even bring other people to Jesus to follow him in the first place, I've got to be following himself. Look at what Jesus said in verse 4 there. Jesus said, the sheep follow him because they know his voice. I must make sure I'm following Jesus myself in the first place. And I start following him when I enter into, and we've sang about it in all the songs we've sang, I become a follower of Jesus when I enter into a close personal relationship with him, and I'm united with him. And Jesus explains for us in this passage that we read how that happens. He talked about himself in verse 9 as being the gate. Entering through the gate, which is Jesus, is the point where I start in becoming his disciple. But being a disciple of Jesus, becoming a disciple of Jesus, a follower of Jesus, doesn't start with something I do. It starts with something he did. And he tells us about it in verse 11 there, if you look. He says, I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. You see, being a disciple of Jesus starts with accepting the free gift of grace and mercy that God offers. And until I accept that, until I accept that before him and before God, I've failed, I'm a little bit ruined. I might be quite a lot ruined, actually. I might have made quite a big mess up of my life, and I certainly might have made a great big mess of my relationship with my Creator. Until I recognize that, until I come to God through Jesus and say, Lord, I need you to rescue me. I accept that you died for me, and I accept that what you did for me in your death can wash away all of that wrong that I've done. Until I do that, then I can't start on the road of being a disciple of Jesus. When I accept that gift through faith and I follow him as the Lord of my life and I put him first, Jesus talked about those who are following him having to deny themselves. What that means is actually putting Jesus and everything about him as first in my life. When I do that, then I become a true disciple of Jesus. So I have to be a disciple of his before I can bring others to do it. But also, being a disciple means putting him first, coming to him in faith and making him the Lord of my life. But being a disciple also means helping others become followers of Jesus. He was talking here to his close friends, the closest of his friends. And we'll think later on about why he had close friends and what that meant to him and what it meant to his friends. But he was talking here to quite a small group. But look what he says in verse 16, down towards the end of what we read there. He said, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. And he said right at the end of what we read, this command I received from my Father. So Jesus was doing exactly what he'd been commanded to do by his Father, making disciples, making people into followers of him. He said the life of a Christian is the life of being a disciple, of following Jesus, but it's also the life of helping others and bringing others into a relationship with him and helping others to mature in our relationship with him. Helping others to follow Jesus and doing them spiritual good in their lives. That's what it means to make disciples. But it's actually quite a sacrifice to do this. If I'm going to make it the aim in my life to follow Jesus and to help others to follow him, it costs. Let me read you something of what Paul said in a letter to one of the churches he wrote in the first century. Listen to these words, no need to turn to them. And bear in mind that this is somebody who was really good at making disciples, who'd been doing it for quite a while. So he was good at it and he was experienced at it. But he said this. He said, "We proclaim him," that's Jesus, "admonishing and teaching everyone with all wisdom, so that we may present everyone perfect in Christ." Okay, he's talking about his end goal when he works and teaches and encourages others. But listen what he says next. "To this end I labor, struggling with all this energy which so powerfully," or sorry, "with all his," that's Jesus' "energy, which so powerfully works in me." So Paul was good at it. He was experienced at it, but he said, well, it's a labor, it's a struggle, and it requires energy. It requires commitment. So disciples are somebody who's come to Jesus and for forgiveness, made him Lord and Master of my life, but also somebody who commits themselves to make other disciples. But how are disciples made? How are followers of Jesus made? Well, the first thing is this, that disciples are made through a relationship with Jesus. If I know him, I develop and I grow as a disciple as that relationship deepens. We talked earlier on about how a person can be a disciple or a follower of anyone. A lot of world religions are based around being a disciple or a follower of a particular person, whether it's the Buddha or whether it's the teachings of Hinduism or whether it's the teachings of Muhammad. You can follow one of these religions, but you'll never get to know the person who leads that religion. You can't know them personally because they're not alive. They might have left teachings or writings behind that you can read, but you can be a follower of their teaching, but you can never get to know them or come into a close walk or friendship with them. You see, becoming a disciple, a follower of Jesus, isn't about signing up to a program or committing yourself to a cause. It's not about following a set of rules or developing a set of techniques. It's nothing about any of those things. Being a follower of Jesus isn't like any of those other religions. It's a real relationship with a real living person. Look at what Jesus said in verse 3 that we read in John's Gospel chapter 10. He said, "The sheep listen to his voice." He's talking about himself there. "And he calls," the shepherd, "calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them." He's talking about a relationship where he knows me intimately and I come to know him as I walk with him as the years go by. He talks about going on ahead of his followers. The sheep follow him because they know his voice. You need to know a person a little while before you know their voice, don't you, I think? Some people have got very distinctive voices, very distinctive accents, very distinctive tones, and you don't need to have known them for very long before you recognize them. The problem is when it's people in your own family, often they sound the same, don't they? Me and my brother sound identical. People, if you hear us on the phone, you wouldn't know who it is. If one of us is in the next room and you can hear us talking and we've both got loud voices, you wouldn't know who it is. I hear my brother's voice sometimes and I think it's me. We sound so similar. But you need to know a person quite well before you can discern their voice. And this is what Jesus is talking about. When you know somebody's voice, you know them quite well, don't you? And then he talks about his sheep, his true followers, are the ones who he knows and who know him. What he's trying to point to here is this is, he's trying to remind us again and again by repetition to his disciples that following him is not a set of rules. It's not a framework. It's not a checklist. It's a relationship. It's something that grows, develops. Any relationship has tensions, doesn't it? Any relationship has it ebbs and flows. It has points where it thrives. It has points where it struggles. And it has points where, in order to put right what's gone wrong, you need to sometimes rewind and go back to where you went wrong. This is why Jesus repeats this message. He's trying to get his disciples to see and understand. They'd all grown up with a religion that was very much a dry set of rules, or at least it was being taught as a dry set of rules. But he's saying to them, this is different. This is different to what you might have encountered anywhere before. This is a relationship. It's something living, something growing, and something that can and should thrive. So when I follow Jesus, I learn to know him. I learn to trust him. I learn to be honest with him. That's an important part of following Jesus. When you have a relationship with somebody that you're close to, especially your partner, you need to do all of these things. You need to learn to know them. You need to learn to trust them, and you need to be honest with them, don't you? And it's no different with a close friendship with Jesus. But being a disciple of Jesus, being a follower of Jesus, is a call to a relationship. All the relationships in our lives, we have to prioritize them, don't we? We've got family relationships, we've got friendships, we've got we're linked to the people that we work with, our neighbours. We have to prioritize them, and at some points in life, some relationships have to be more of a priority than others. But the call to a relationship with Jesus is a call to a relationship and a friendship that must be the highest priority in my life. So disciples are made. My relationship with Jesus in following him grows and develops through friendship with him. But our relationship with Jesus, we help it grow and we help others grow through relationship and through friendship with each other. But now, I can relate. I was telling somebody earlier on that I hit the massive landmark of 50 years old just last month, actually. And it's quite traumatic, isn't it, for those who've been there already. I've done a lot of reflecting, actually, in the few weeks since I was 50. And one of the things I've reflected on is the fact that I can see, looking back, especially in my years from when I was about probably 12, just coming into my teenage years through till probably my mid-30s, I would say, I can recollect that I can see now, I saw it a bit at the time, but I see it more now, that God quite clearly brought into my life probably three or four people who obviously he had brought into my life to take an interest in me, to try and encourage me as a follower of Jesus, to try and equip me, to try and help me grow. And I can see that now. And that was it's a wonderful thing to reflect on that. It's a humbling thing to reflect on. But I can look back to a point where I think that probably stopped happening. I think that probably stopped happening when I was probably around in my mid-30s. And again, I didn't notice it at the time, but looking back, I can spot it. Now, I don't think it stopped happening because I was a finished work, okay? Because I'm not. None of us are. I think it stopped happening on reflection because God was trying to say to me, it's time that you started doing that sort of thing. It's time that you started looking out for people in your life who actually you can take an interest in, people who you can encourage, people who you can work with one-to-one, and people who you can develop as followers of me. And that was quite a humbling but quite an encouraging thing to realize. You see, Jesus had thousands of followers. When he stood up to preach, when he did miracles, there would be crowds of thousands, typically, who would turn up and follow Jesus where he went. So you could say Jesus had thousands of followers when he was around a couple of thousand years ago. But he had a smaller group who he worked more closely with. He had 12 disciples, apostles that he called them, who he spent a lot more time with. But even within that group of 12, he didn't work with them all to the same level of intensity. There were three of them, Peter, James, and John, who you would probably describe as being in his inner circle, the ones who he went out of his way to spend real quality time with, the ones who he went out of his way to disappear with them when there was nobody else around so that he could do exactly this. So, and it's humbling, isn't it, that even Jesus, who when he became a child and grew into a man, we often reflect that he accepted the limitations of being a human. And one of them was that he only had a limited amount of time. And we can all relate to that, can't we? So if I'm going to try and encourage, try and work with others one-to-one, I can only do it with, if Jesus could only manage it with an inner circle of three people, then chances are you and I will only manage it with an even smaller group than that. If you read through Mark's gospel, there's no need to refer to it, but that verse I've put up, talks about a time when, and if you count it up, this happens 8 times. Mark records this in his gospel. The story will go something like this. Jesus did a miracle. Thousands of people came flocking to see what was going on, and they got all excited about it. There was such a commotion, such noise, such chaos going on that Jesus couldn't actually get any quality time with his disciples, so he took them off somewhere quiet. Or he said to the person he'd healed, I don't want you to tell anybody. That seems a really strange thing for Jesus to do, doesn't it? To heal somebody who maybe was blind, give them their sight back, just say, can you keep quiet about it? Can you not mention it to anybody? It seems very strange, doesn't it? But there's a very good reason why Jesus did this, and Mark explains it at the end of his gospel after it's happened 8 times in Mark's gospel. He tells us that Jesus often did this so that, simply so that he made sure he got quality time with his disciples, and that just now and again he was with his followers and there was nobody else around. So we grow as followers of Jesus through relationship with each other. There's quite a few alarming tendencies in modern life, isn't there? This is one of the other things I'm reflecting on now that I'm 50. But if you look at the statistics of people and how many people live in houses, it's true in the Western world, probably more so in the States, but certainly it's true in this country as well, that an increasing number of people seem to like to live alone. People like to protect their personal space, and we value devices over people, don't we? People even watch TV on their own quite a lot, you know. I work for a broadcast company, and we do all sorts of clever technology that I don't understand that helps us measure how many people are watching television, yeah. And increasingly, people don't even watch television on a television. We watch it on a device. You watch it on a phone or a tablet or a laptop. So even things that, you know, for many of us might have grown up in households and our houses now, Sitting together watching something on TV might be one of the very few things we do together as a family sometimes. And that's why a TV dinner is such a good idea, isn't it, sometimes? There's a tendency for people to want to do things on their own and to think that I'm all right on my own. I don't need community. I don't need relationship with other people. I saw, by the way, just as an aside, I did see, If you're a parent and you worry about how much time your kids spend on devices, on using tech, there's some really good seminars and training courses I've seen advertised recently that are being run in Farnborough through the Christian charity Care for the Family. They're running some seminars in March, I think, in Farnborough. I've seen an advert for around parenting in a world that's dominated by screens, and I really recommend you look into that if it's something you feel like you would benefit from getting some help with. But as disciples of Jesus, as followers of Jesus, the idea is not that my life is oriented and controlled around myself. My life needs to become oriented around other people, around other followers of Jesus, or other people who are on a journey of faith towards becoming followers of Jesus. You see, it's expected, Jesus expects of his followers that we transmit our knowledge of him and of his word through every moment in our life. When God gave the law, a framework for living to his people in Old Testament times, to Israel, he told them that they should, in the book of Deuteronomy, he told them that they should talk about God's word and about what God has done when they lie down in their beds, when they get up in their morning, when they sit and eat, when they walk around, whilst they work. It's to be something that's woven into the fabric of my life. True followers, disciples of Jesus, continually look to have spiritually meaningful conversations with each other. True disciples and followers, and this is a tough one, they give and they listen to correction sometimes. Sometimes need to be called out in something that's wrong in their life. And you can't do that with everybody, can you? Even in a church of this size, you can't. Your relationship with everybody in the church can't be such that you go around telling everybody in the church you could do with fixing this in your life, or that's not quite right. You can only accept that from a small, close group of friends, can't you? Maybe even just one person in your life who you respect and know that they care about you enough that you can be one-to-one with them, and they'll say, you need to watch out for this in your life. You maybe need to correct this. So true disciples give and listen to correction. But true disciples, true followers of Jesus, are also honest about my own weakness and about my own sin. I can't expect somebody else to be honest with me about their failings unless I'm honest with them about mine. The problem is that sin rules us to such an extent, doesn't it, that sin can deceive us. And we need other followers of Jesus to help us see the things that we can't see about ourselves sometimes. So we've looked at what a disciple is and how disciples are made. Let's just look at the why finally. Two things I'm going to put up here. Number one is that if I'm making disciples, I'm engaging with God in the business of extending his kingdom. We read earlier on, verse 16 of John chapter 10, Jesus said to his followers, "I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them in also, and they too will listen to my voice." But listen to how he finishes that. "There shall be one flock and one shepherd." His disciples had a lot, his original disciples had a lot of lessons to learn. One of them was that, one of the lessons they had to learn was that they had a lot to learn. Being a follower of Jesus, advancing his kingdom, it wasn't something that when they first met him, they thought that his kingdom was going to be advanced through wars and through military victories. It was going to be advanced quickly with great strides happening all at the same time. But the reality was, and they had to learn, that it's a bit of a slow burn. Discipling others and growing myself in following Jesus is something that's done with a view not on now, but on eternity. Look at the time it took. It took them so long sometimes that even Jesus himself got frustrated with his own followers, that it took them so long to understand. Even in the passage we read, he had to explain it all to them twice, didn't he? Those who were closest to him and who were with him all the time for pretty much 3 years, it took them such a long time to understand what to us maybe seemed like quite basic things. But we've had the benefit of having people write them down and explain them to us, following on from the teachings of Jesus. I think this is part of what Jesus described when he talked about having a view not on now but on eternity. He said his followers should build up for themselves treasure in heaven. And I've thought a lot about what those words "build up" mean. When you build something up, that means that you do it slowly, don't you? One little layer at a time. You can't build on one layer until the one underneath it is solid. And that's what he's talking about. He's talking about not just the emphasis on building up treasure in heaven rather than on earth. The emphasis is on building up. That if the priority of your life is going to be following Jesus, and the business of your life is going to be extending God's kingdom, then it's going to be a slow burn. It requires patience and it requires dedication. Jesus wants us to desire things that will last and invest in things that will last. And just finally, why make disciples? Why is it so important? So it's important because when we're making disciples, when we're encouraging others to become followers of Jesus and then helping them mature as followers of Jesus, we are working with God and extending his kingdom. But also, making disciples is the business of making people like Jesus. You see, the New Testament tells us in lots of places, in the book of Romans, we read that it always was God's plan that he would have people, many people, and we sang about it in a couple of our songs, that will be conformed to the image of his Son. The idea of Jesus saving you and I and bringing us into a close relationship with him is not just to rescue us, but to develop us, to mature us, and to make us like him. That's God's big mission. Paul speaks about the life of a disciple being the life of Christ living in me, literally my life becoming united and bound up with his life. And he talks about Christians, followers of Jesus, as being ones who are being transformed into his image. There's a lot going on there, isn't there? But this was always God's purpose from the start. If you go back right to the first chapter of Genesis, it says that when God created and fashioned the world, the very last thing that he did, the crowning glory of his creation, was to make humans. And he made them. Notice what God says. If you read at the end of Genesis chapter 1, he says that we're going to make mankind and we're going to make them in our own image. It was always God's intention that people would become fashioned like God. Not like God in every possible way, but like God in as much as it can be reflected in our bodies and in our minds and in our spirits. As much as can be reflected in something that doesn't last forever. That was always God's intention, but it was ruined, wasn't it? It was seriously messed up because of our rebellion and because of our sinful attitudes. You see, you and I can find satisfaction and purpose in all sorts of things in life. All of these sorts of things, they're all fantastic things. What would life be without books? Not much, I don't think. Not for somebody who loves reading. We can find satisfaction and purpose and joy in all of the amazing things that God has created and all of the amazing abilities that he's given humankind in art, in literature, in sport, in relationships. All of these things are things that have come from the intention of God that humans should flourish, should grow, and should enjoy and be blessed by everything God's given us. But we find true satisfaction and we find deep satisfaction in becoming exactly what God designed us to be. Right back at the time of creation, God designed mankind to be like him, to be one with him, to be united with him. And look what Jesus says. I'm going to finish with this. It's right in the middle of the passage that we read together, John chapter 10, verse 10. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they might have life and have it to the full. What is Jesus saying there? Well, he's saying exactly this, that the deepest satisfaction, the deepest purpose that can be found in life is in being exactly what God made me to be. This is exactly what Jesus had in mind when he said this. Making disciples is the business of and maturing as disciples is exactly this. This is the goal of it, is in you and I becoming exactly what Jesus made us to be and helping others becoming exactly what he made them to be. This is his grand purpose.